Y'all, welcome to another episode of Knights at the Round Table. Today we get into something a little spicy. We talking about cults, y'all. We're going to have two guests on that were a part of a cult, got out of a cult, and now is going to tell us about their experience in it and how they were able to get out of it, what they went through, and all the juicy details. I know you guys are going to enjoy it. Make sure to drop a message, subscribe, do all the good stuff. Join us on Patreon if you want to become a member. We love you so much. Here is Knights at the Round Table. And welcome to another episode of Knights at the Round Table. It's your boy, Man Weezy. We got the queen to the left, Angela Johnson.
Hello.
We got B-Real to the right.
Angela Johnson Reyes.
Angela Johnson Reyes. I'm sorry, queen. Your last name is way more.
Elijah does that all day.
Yeah.
Oh,
Lord. And then they do that. Yeah, there you go.
If y'all are watching us on YouTube, you will notice that we have a guest with us, our homegirl Joanna from our Patreon. Shout out to the Patreon. You know what I'm saying? She's part of the VIP membership where we talk once a month on Zoom, and she gets to be a part of stuff like this, which is super dope. Today we're talking about cults, and we're jumping right in.
Say it again.
We're not Mufasa. No, I'm just kidding. We're not drinking anything special. It's just some agua, some fine premium H2O.
Gotta stay sober minded.
We're about to drive after this, so we just want y'all to know that we stay responsible. But we talking about cults, and this is a little fun fact that we didn't know when Joanna signed on, but she was born into one.
Born in.
And so she dropped that little gem on us, and we're gonna hear her story real quick, and
hear everything
afterwards. We have Destiny, who's also going to be talking about how she married into one, and we got two guests today, so it's she's in the waiting room. We're gonna bring her in after we talk to Joanna. So give us the deets. What happened?
So my parents were a part of the Jesus People movement in the 60s and 70s in Southern California. They both experienced incredible moves of God. They were both hippies, saved in the Jesus People movement. And then they joined this one, I don't remember what's like a pod or a church or something like that. And there was somebody that, from the outside that came in. I'm giving you like a very obviously condensed version of this. But they, somebody from the outside came in, took it over, created it into a cult. My parents had an arranged marriage in that cult. And then spent their honeymoon driving from California to Colorado to basically start a plant of the church in Colorado, which, as far as I know, still exists in a very small, it's a very small church right now.
Who arranged the marriage?
So his elders and her elders got together and introduced them. They met one time, they went out to breakfast and then reported back to the elders. Yes. And a month later, they were married in my grandparents' backyard. Wow. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So they were in the Jesus People movement, and then somebody from the outside came in and like started finessing things. Were your parents aware that they were becoming a cult, or they were moving into a cult, or were they still thinking like, oh, we love Jesus and like we just do new special things?
Yeah. I think from what I understand, it was a very slow progression. Basically, the way that it happened was, so in the Jesus People movement, it's all hippies getting saved. The church did not like them. They didn't want to open their doors to them. So they started their own pseudo congregations. Probably now it would be called like a house church or something like that. And at the same time in Asia, there was a movement in the underground church there where God was just sort of having the same, they were having the same experience as the Jesus People. So somehow the Jesus People movement and the people in the underground church got connected. They sent a person out to see what the Lord was doing in LA, and that person basically took over the church. And it was a very slow progression. I don't think they realized it until you know, years later. I think they're in it for 15 years. And in the beginning, like I said, I mean, they were having mass salvations, healings, open heaven visions, like encountering the Lord. And then slowly but surely, it was like, read the Bible, but read it based off of what the leader's version of that Bible verse was first. Or you have to denounce your family and everything that came before you and say that you and your generations and your generations' generations will serve this church and serve this leader to come. You had to like publicly make these declarations. They would tell you when to have children. They would tell you when to go back to, like, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Now, what was the moment for them? Because for them to kind of leave this thing is that's always an interesting thing, because a lot of people, like, obviously when someone's in a cult, you don't realize it, you know, and after the years of kind of brainwashing or programming, there's this thing that happens with the cognitive dissonance where all of a sudden, like, the more that you're in it and the more compromises you make to stay in it, like, the less likely you are to admit, like, I'm in a cult. And, you know, so what was that moment for them?
It's actually really cool because, so it was multiple things that led up to it, which I think is how it always works. You know, they had distanced themselves from their family. Mm-hmm. And I know my mom's parents were very proactive, especially after they had us as kids, about wanting to be in our lives and their lives. And so I think that was planting a seed. And then we had really good friends of ours who are still friends of ours to this day that ended up leaving, that sort of were going back undercover and trying to recruit people out of the church. But then in the end, really what it was that my dad was sort of always the rebellious one, because he loved to read the word, and he would read it like not under the scriptural dissonance of whatever the leader had written. He would just go read the word for himself. And
I love that that's rebellious.
I know. Right? He also wore Hawaiian shirts and flip flops, which is like very
Colorado. You know. Gotta love it.
So he's rebellious across the board. But it was through him reading the word and the Holy Spirit highlighting truth that he just was like, man, this is not lining up with what I'm reading. Like, what they're teaching is not lining up with what I'm reading in the word. Wow. And so they had to go behind the scenes, so very secretive, and find an apartment. And because we were living on the, there was a house on the complex that we were living in. So they had to go find a house and make all these plans in private, knowing that the day that they chose to leave, we would now be of the world and of the devil and completely outcast in their system. So when I was five, they left. I mean, we just packed everything up and peaced out and moved into our rental our rental house. And then probably for like 5-10 years was just chaos, as you can imagine. I mean, 15 years in a cult that you thought was the Lord, and all of a sudden your eyes are open and realizing the Lord, and you're in a marriage. I mean, when I say my parents are opposites, you could not meet two more opposite. It's like if one says I love cheese, the other one's like, cheese is the most disgusting thing in the world. Like, they're four opposites. And here they are in arranged marriage with a 5- and a 7-year-old, two young kids, just trying to figure out what to do. And it was like, do we believe in Santa Claus? Do we believe in the movies? Do we believe, should we take pictures of our kids now? Because you couldn't take pictures, couldn't watch movies. Like, all of that was of the world.
Wait, so, what was the not taking pictures? What was that about?
That one, I don't know if it was like a record keeping thing. I don't totally know what that's about, but there's very few pictures. Again, my parents were rebellious. They would take pictures. They would take us out to a park. They would take pictures of us. It was all very like rebellion, and you're not supposed to do this, which I sort of feel like now it makes sense why I'm so like anti, like, strong, enforced leadership. Maybe I feel a little rebellion spirit in me that I need to
deal with. Are your parents' elders still alive?
They're still alive. They're still married.
And they're still a part of the cult?
No. Oh, sorry. No. We left when I was 5.
No, but your your parents' elders, the ones who set them up in their marriage, the ones.
That I don't know. Once we left, we had no contact with them. We couldn't talk to them. We couldn't speak to them. So whoever it was, the elders of their church that set them up, we have zero contact with them.
And they don't try to, because all I know is from the movies and stuff like that. So they don't try to like find you and like, well, we got to kill them, like the mafia or like, I don't know how it works.
I mean, we're Italian and we're from mafia. So
you guys are.
They could take us out. But no, they did not try. You're completely disconnected. Mm. You have made your choice. You cannot go back. You're completely nixed from there.
No take backs. Got it.
No take backs.
It's interesting. You were talking about just kind of like all the little things where there was like, no, you can't do this or whatever. But that's like one of the main common things when you look amongst some of the more like destructive cults is there are too many rules. And they're usually set in place to build some sorts of sense of like structure and organization. But you in finding that organization and structure and knowing like, hey, I can't go past this line. It's also a means of control to control the group.
Right.
And so it's kind of like, and usually for the leaders, they have less rules. So it's like a pyramid type hierarchy. So the people at the top can get away with murder.
Right.
But the people at the bottom don't take pictures of your kids.
Right.
And so one question I asked for you, Joanna, is why do you think that that group that kind of came out of such like an actual legitimate like move of God, the Jesus People movement, which we've talked about this on the podcast before. And why do you think that those people coming out of that were susceptible to like slowly dive into this cult that kind of got started?
That's a great question. I think that it's probably multiple things.
Uh-huh.
One is you have all these hippies that were just free love, radical, but there was also, I think at the core of us, no matter how free love we want to be, we still want to be loved. We still want to know that there's somebody older than us looking out for us, older than us taking responsibility, you know, like that. If you want to use like a very Christian-y term, that covering.
Yeah.
And I think that there was just a loss of that. There was nobody in leadership amongst the hippies. There was nobody even in leadership in the churches that wanted to come and lead them. And so here you are in this movement where you're experiencing God, and then there's somebody that comes and says, I want to disciple you. I want to, you know, it provides a structure to what you're experiencing. Even though that feels like that's anti what they stood for, I feel like it still provided something that a safety that they were looking for. I don't know if that's like 100% the answer. I think there's probably multiple things. I think it also is like when you have a dynamic speaker and somebody that just says and does all fancy and this, it's so easy to be swayed by that and drawn into that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, years later, you'll realize, I don't even believe what they're saying. I just believed in the hype of who they were or who they are. I mean, I think that's how people get drawn in, even in the charismatic movement, is like, man, how did I get sucked into this church? Because this person, that the hype of them, the sway of them, the persuasive words, it drew me in, and I wasn't even listening to what they were really saying.
Yeah,
I think there's something to be said about structure when you hit on that, because I remember hearing a long time ago, even with children, so like even though structure was like opposite of what like free love and all of that was, I think innate in all of us humans, we crave structure, which it talks about in the Bible. Like we wanted the rules, we wanted the king, we wanted the whatever, whatever. Like there was something that I read a long time ago about children and how if they don't know where like the line is, like around the park, right? Where the gate is around the park, they won't go venture far away because they don't know where their boundary is, where their rules and regulations are. So they'll just like stay close. But then once you put a gate around the perimeter way out there, then they'll start to branch out and explore because they know where the line is. They know where they can't go. If they don't know where they can't go, then they stay right here. So it's, I think it's something like innate in all of us that crave a little bit of like rules, regulations, structures. So we know where's the line. So we know like, and part of us is like, so we can make sure we do it right.
Would you, another thing I would, from the outside looking in, I think because the people who were part of that movement were so ostracized and expelled from kind of like the religious establishment at that time with the churches, that I have to think that there was a part of them feeling like left out, not counted in, and kind of like, nobody wants us. So here someone comes along and preys on that vulnerability. And whoever that person was, there was probably like a little bit of, you know, some narcissistic tendencies, probably a little bit of genius in the sense of like, and that's the interesting thing about cults. And like, I'm super, I wouldn't say I'm passionate, but I am very, very intrigued by them. So I've watched a ton of documentaries, like all of it. But it's always interesting to me that these leaders who end up either intentionally or unintentionally, it becomes intentional at some point, but they know exactly kind of who to prey on.
Absolutely.
Like they find these people in vulnerable positions, whether it's somebody who has just experienced like a very traumatic situation with the loss of somebody important to them. And then they find them and then they bring them in. And it's usually by someone who's close to them. It's by family and friends, because like people find it harder to refuse the offer, like, hey, come with me to this church or whatever. Come with me to this experience.
Come with me and you'll see.
Anyways.
Willy Wonka was a cult leader.
Yeah, definitely. The Oompa Loompas, man, they used to be real people. they harbored unforgiveness. That's why they're short. Anyways, but that's one thing that I'd probably, from the outside looking in, say, oh, yeah, like they were vulnerable in that sense of feeling so discounted that somebody now said, hey, you guys get the chance to like be the foundation, the cornerstone of something really important.
Yeah. It's like the ultimate sales pitch, right? Like if you think of like the ultimate sales guy at a car dealership, what he tells you is you need something that you didn't know that you needed, but he's got it for you. And that's really, if you think of somebody, if you think of even like, you know, you have your like wild and crazy cults all the way down to sometimes within a charismatic church, you see some of the similar things where it's like, I can see that you are down and out, or that you are really depressed, or that you are da 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 da, and I have just the thing for you.
Yes.
But it's not like, follow Jesus, like come with me and I'm going to introduce you to the man Jesus that has everything that you want. It's like, follow me and I'm going to help you with everything that you need, you know, and all of a sudden you're buying a, you know, someone's sweat rag and a, like a canister of their sweat that's dripped down and it's like anointed and everything that you need. But then you're, those people have so much, you know, I've been there too. It's very easy for someone that comes out of a cult to end up in cult-like situations over. And I found that in my life, I went and I lived in a Jesus people commune in Chicago when I was 19 years old that, you know, sort of came from the same thing. And then from there, I was 8 years working with a large missions organization overseas, and none of those things in themselves are cults, but within them, there are people that have cult-like tendencies that draw in those that are looking for something. Yeah. But what was crazy is when I left all of that 7 years ago, I moved back home and I started going through trauma counseling and undoing growing up in a, you know, even though we left the cult when I was five, my parents still had cult tendencies and cult thinking and cult theology that affected my whole childhood. And then I went into these situations that have cultic tendencies, and I realized that at the end of it, I was still so broken. Like, nothing that I thought I was going to get from these leaders or these ministries or whatever, none of that did anything for me, because it never introduced me to Jesus. It just introduced me to being a workaholic, and ministry is life, and other people's needs are more important than yours, and serve another man's vision, and then one day you might get your own dream come true. But it's all this carrot dangled out in front of you, and you never get it, you know. So it is, I don't know where I was going with that point.
No,
but
you actually answered my question, because I was going to ask you where if you found the similarities into where you're at now. So you know, it's interesting that there are a lot of tendencies that we see we're not out here calling churches cults, but it is interesting that within certain places that there are cult-like similarities to where it's, and I wouldn't know because I haven't been in churches like that, but I've heard a lot of stories to where it's like, yeah, bruh, this is what's happening behind the scenes. Go ahead, baby.
Did your parents are still married. Mm-hmm. Did they ever join another church, or were they like, just guard up, we'll just love Jesus from the living room?
It's funny. I was thinking about this in preparation for today, and we spent so many years, we would walk into churches and there would be something there that would trigger them. Mm-hmm. And we would be the family that would get up and leave in the middle of worship, or get up and leave in the middle of a sermon because they were so triggered. So it took us a long time to find a church that they felt safe and comfortable in. We started in the Vineyard. We stayed in Colorado for the rest of my growing up years. And for some reason they really liked the Vineyard. And then from there, we ended up in an evangelical Presbyterian church, which I think they very much liked because it was safe. It wasn't like too wild and crazy, but you have a little bit of the Holy Spirit and strong principles. But they're not getting involved in people's lives, telling them what to do and, you know, how to live their lives. So we are in that for about 15 years, I think, from there. And then now they're not really, I think they're just burnt on it all. So it took them a long time. And I think there's still things within church that still trigger them, but they choose to go for the community of it.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're all a little burnt out, but
let's be honest.
You know, something you said earlier, it was, it's one thing that I've recognized in watching different cults and stuff and like kind of dissecting it, because that's always been the fascinating thing for me, is I think my interest in it is, how do people and why do people fall for this?
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's anyone knowingly that wakes up one day and is like, all right, babe, I'll see you later. I'm gonna go join a cult, you know? So it's like, you're either born into it, you're forced into it, or you're just manipulated into it. I don't think there's anyone with the intention of like, you know what, joining a cult, time to check it off the list. Let's do this.
Well, we're watching Son of Sam right now on Netflix. Have you seen it?
Uh-uh.
Have you seen Son of Sam on Netflix? Mm-mm. Okay, so the killer Son of Sam in New York. It's this whole documentary that is, and we haven't finished it yet, so I don't know the end yet, but there was one news reporter who was following the clues that everybody missed to see that the Son of Sam wasn't acting alone, that he was actually part of a cult that was killing people. And then that cult was connected to the Manson cult. Okay. And so he's doing like all of this like investigative reporting on these cults and figuring out all the ties to it and whatever. But so as he was interviewing different people who were a part of it and got out of it or whatever, he was finding that a lot of the people that were in it were like outcasts.
Yeah.
They didn't have a lot of friends. Yep. They maybe didn't have like personality skills. Like they were the awkward one that was kind of like, you know, weird or whatever. And just the ones who were looking for purpose Look, it's the same thing about joining a gang. Like, you're looking for that sense of community, family, purpose, and you can find it in people who relate. Mm-hmm. And in the cult situation, the people that were relating were like those who were the odd ones.
Yeah. It makes sense. And, you know, for the ones that end up becoming bigger, one of the main premises is that they offer these easy solutions to some of your deepest questions.
Exactly.
And with that, it's like, hey, if you adopt this doctrine that I'm going to give you, and I will give you a recipe for change. And so you will now be able to unlock your full potential as a human being, as a person. Yeah. You will be a better father, mother, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of these people who are in these vulnerable positions will fall for that because they're thinking, oh, this sounds great.
Yeah. Like, that sounds familiar.
Everything that I want to be, you have the recipe to help me change and to get there. And so then it ends up turning these people into believers of this charismatic leader who is very persuasive, highly manipulative, usually very narcissistic. Yep. And then all of a sudden you got a recipe for disaster. And then what ends up happening is for someone to leave either has this crazy epiphany or the cult is broken up by allegations and the police coming in and stepping in. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's so interesting because if I think about, I mean, obviously I was 5 when my parents left, so I don't have a ton of knowledge. I just know the aftermath and what it did to our family, what it did to my life, you know, that kind of stuff. Our parents really tried to shield us from, you know, what happened once we left. But I know, you know, when I was in this missions organization, I was living overseas. It was the second location I had gone to. And, I joined this team. I went out there specifically for this team. And what's so interesting was that I had lived in another, I'm trying to be careful. I don't want to out anything. So I'm trying to be careful how I say it, but I lived in another location. I had a very hard time with leadership. They were like very specific of, we're not going to release you because you're single, because you're a female, because of da 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 da. So after 3 years of serving them, I left and was devastated, brokenhearted. And then I received this email from people that I had known that had moved into a place in Africa. And this email was like, we believe that you have a purpose and a destiny in Africa. We believe that there's calling that has yet to come alive, you know, and it just was like this. Oh my gosh, this is everything that I've ever wanted to hear that I've never heard. And it was like, duh, of course I'm going to go, you know?
Yeah, right.
And so I went under the guise of, it's going to be all this freedom and you're going to have this responsibility and this place of leadership and da da da. And all it was serving their vision. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. Like, I'm good with serving a vision, but when it's so clear that they are squashing what the Lord has for you in order for their vision and their ministry to excel, that's when it starts to become, hey, this isn't actually healthy or godly or biblical in how that you're doing this. And they, even to the point where I came with an idea, we ran these training schools. I came with an idea for a school to them and they were like, yeah, we don't know about that. And a month later, they introduced it to our team and said they had created this school. It was exactly what I had presented to them. And it was just like their vision. And it's amazing what the Lord has showed us. And so I can see it reflecting back now how, again, they were not cult leaders. It was not a cult, but the tendencies that sort of hit what was still in me from growing up in a cult were very similar. And they would have been to the point where it was, you know, if somebody was praying about leaving the team, that person would have to go to the leaders and one, ask their permission, and two, ask the leaders if they heard the Lord the same way. And if the leaders came back and said, we didn't hear the Lord the same way, then you're either rebellious or you stay on the team. And they were using the prophetic and they were, you know, they would literally train in the school saying, sometimes our emotions get in the way of us hearing the Lord and we need to include leaders that can hear the Lord for us or on our behalf of us. And that's when I was like,
Now we're good.
got crazy real fast. And they would say when people would leave the team and they didn't agree with it, they would say they've walked away from their calling. They didn't include us in it. They've missed the Lord. They even emailed me one time. I had an extended stay in Colorado with my family and there was some miscommunication, and they emailed me and they said, there's three versions of God's best for you and you are not walking in any of them. Wow. Being with us in Africa would be the ultimate God's best for you.
How did you reply?
I would have laughed.
Give us the tea.
Oof. I had a whole breakdown and was just like, do I even hear the Lord? Am I even like, what am I doing? Can I keep serving these people? But here's what's interesting is the way that the cult, you know, some would say programs you or brainwashes you, the way that they brainwash you is no matter what injustice happens, no matter what suffering you endure, you continue to serve that leader because it's for the greater good. So what happened is what kicked into my brain is I need to go back and continue to serve them because I haven't gotten everything that God has for me.
Wow.
And I did. I went back for over a year and I served them and I served them hard. And then it got to a point I started to question them. I started to ask them, like, who are you guys accountable? They had pulled fully away from our mission space that we were part of and tried to become their own separate thing. And I was asking them, like, who are you guys accountable to? Who are you talking to? Who is speaking into your life? And they were like, the wife said to me, there's nobody that operates at the level that I operate in the spiritual realm. And so I can't, how can I have an accountability leader if they don't operate in what I operate in? So right now I don't have anyone.
Wow.
So what's that?
I was going to say that's crazy, but that's like, that's what cults need to survive. Like all of their believers, air quote, they need just an absolute, like, utter commitment to whoever's leading this movement. And on top of that, there is this, like, extreme level of commitment. And there is no place for you to have any sort of internal struggle or to doubt or to even express any differing opinion than what this leader has said. Yeah. And, like, when you're in it, I can't speak because I've never been in it. I'm just so immersed into this world that the thing is, it's like... There's so many other people around you who are expressing their faith.
Yeah.
Everyone else believes and you're the only one who doesn't. Like you need to whip up into shape. You better start believing. Have a little bit less doubt, you know, like just follow, trust us, you know? And so that's crazy to me that they would literally put you in that place, but
yeah. Well, and then if you start, what happened, I don't know if this is across the board in all cults, but what would happen with this team that I was on was if you started to question leadership, you have now opened a door of accusation and they're now in warfare mode because and you now need deliverance or inner healing.
Yeah.
But guess who was the only people that could do the deliverance and inner healing?
Them.
The leader.
Yeah.
Those at the top.
The people that are like triggering you and telling you you need this are now the only people that can fix you. And then they know all the insights into your life. And yeah, it was a hot mess. It was a hot mess.
How did you get out of that?
I realized after this whole time when they said I was bringing accusation and I was questioning them, I just knew there was a moment in time that they no longer were listening. Like it was just very clear that I was no longer welcome. And thankfully I have parents who have been through similar things and they were a lifeline. And I went home for an extended period of time to pray and to talk to people that I was in accountability with. And it just was very, very, very clear that it was time, because even some of the our missions base operated similarly to a church. We had a board of elders and then you had the team leaders and sort of so on. Even some of the people on the eldership were like, you have to leave. This is like, you're not doing well. So I had multiple people saying, when are you leaving? You need to leave. And I just knew it was time, and I left, and it's been 7 years, and I've been in counseling for 6 of those.
Wow.
Trying to undo, and there's still so much, because you know, it really just, it tackled on to everything else that I didn't even know was there from growing up. So yeah.
Well, I'm glad you found your way to us.
Me too.
I freaking love having you in our little
Patreon cult.
In our cult.
Yeah. not our cult, not our cults, our religious. This is a cult.
People probably think we're a cult.
Where you're all white fit next Saturday.
The conservative ones think we're cult. I know, Joanna, you gotta go. Thank you so much for coming. We love you so much. We'll see you on the next Patreon Zoom meeting. We love you, love you, love
you. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Bye.
Thanks for sharing.
Bye.
And up next, you guys, we are bringing on Destiny. What is up, girl? Who's coming from Mississippi?
Yes, yes. Originally from Ohio, but I'm in Mississippi now. I've been down here for like 8 years, so I guess I can officially claim that I'm Southern. So
you sound like it.
Yeah, you do have a little,
thank you.
Going on. Me and Destiny got the chat yesterday, and she was able to talk to me a little bit about her experience. So if you're just joining us, we are talking about cults. We just spoke with Joanna, and now we get to talk to Destiny. And Destiny's story is a little bit different because you came into it. Well, I'm gonna let you tell us, what was your experience?
Okay, so I only left 5 years ago. And this is the first time that I'm actually talking and openly sharing my opinion that, hey, I think I was in a cult. Mm-hmm. There's so much of what Joanne said that I'm like, oh, wow, there's so many similarities, which then just confirms that, wow, this, like the tendencies are mm-hmm. there, the similarities of the cult-like mentalities there. But I was a preacher's wife, it was an independent Pentecostal organization. They were international and, churches everywhere around the world, a big missions program down in Mexico, and a bunch, like hundreds of churches throughout the U.S. So, I joined, the one when I was living in Ohio. And then I ended up in Mississippi because my husband at the time was promoted to basically a preacher position down here. So we got relocated. But when I was in that organization, I attended seminary for licensing. It was everything that they did was very in-house. Like, you know, most organizations or radical organizations like this, it's all their own doctrine, their own teaching. The founder of the organization wrote all her own books, and that's what we studied in order to get our licensing. We went to church all the time. We had services Wednesday night, Friday night, twice on Sunday, and they were not short services. I mean, preaching for hours and hours, and it was your typical holy rolling and screaming and crying and prayer and oil flying all over the place. Like, there isn't a story that you could tell me about a church service of something crazy happening that would shock me in any way, because I've seen so much crazy stuff. but this organization was started in the 60s by a middle-aged woman who had a personal revelation that there were different levels of abodes for believers. And she taught that the Old Testament tabernacle was a blueprint for how we would actually spend eternity. So you had a 30-fold, a 60-fold, a 100-fold, and a 120-fold, which was the Melchizedek priesthood, the bride of Christ. And we were taught that her calling in life was to preach this message, and we called it the bride's message or the message. And now, you know, when I just lay it all out like that, I'm like, oh my gosh, how did I ever like just walk in and be like, oh, this is totally normal and I accept this. But like we said earlier, it's really interesting how it just kind of happens. Like you were saying, you don't just wake up one day and like, oh, I'm going to join this now.
Yeah.
I was 18, in high school still. And I had a friend that was involved in her church, which was this organization. And she would invite me every now and then, and I wasn't really feeling it. I was kind of raised in a broken home. Mom and dad weren't in the picture. My grandparents took custody of me at a young age. It was just kind of a rough childhood But when I was 18, I kind of got into this party scene, and I went to this wild party and I got taken advantage of. I was raped. Hit like just a really low time in my life. Whoa. So what do? Down, beaten up. I called that friend from school and was like, hey, I really need help. I need somewhere to go. Can I go to church with you? And I had no church background. Like my grandparents, they weren't the church going people. I didn't even know the story of Noah's Ark. Like I had no idea about anything to do with the Bible. I was 18 and I went to church with her the next morning. And I basically found a place to dump the brokenness and the shame. And that's really how it happened, is I just like walked in this really vulnerable state. And I think hindsight, it's not straight up manipulation, but that's kind of everyone's story, is like you were saying, they're kind of in these down places and you walk in and someone has this answer like on a silver platter, like, oh, your shame and your brokenness and the fact that you had a messed up childhood and, you know, this young little naive girl, like she needs help and she's lost. Like Jesus is the answer for that. And you don't think, well, that there's nothing wrong with that. Cause how can you go wrong with a whole bunch of Jesus?
Yeah.
How can you go wrong with like just diving in head first and going to church all the time? And, you know, like I said, the Wednesday night, Friday night, Sunday schools, Bible studies, youth events, how can you go wrong? Like it's all really good stuff. So that's kind of just how I think you slip into it and you don't really realize what you're getting into. So that was kind of how it started. And with that, like brokenness and shame, you kind of were told in this message that you were called to something very exclusive, that only few people were chosen, that, you know, there was probably only like 50 people in that church up in Ohio. The headquarters church was over in Jeffersonville, Indiana. I think it might have had like 1,000 to 2,000 people, and that was like the big church. So but they would always justify that with like, well, this message isn't for everyone. And the churches were always in like really poverty stricken areas, so it was always people who were just struggling with life. Maybe no education, really just no purpose in life. And you walk in and it's like, wow, I'm special. I'm chosen. And we used to always say in the church, like, you know, God could have called the neighbor next door, but he didn't. He called you to be here. He chose me. So I'm exclusive. I'm special. And as a young 18-year-old girl, that was awesome, especially coming from the emotional trauma that I'd had just kind of growing up and, you know, the typical daddy issues and all that fun stuff. Like it felt really good to walk in and be so accepted and to be told that basically there's a pill that I could take to fix all my problems. And I was special and chosen. And that's really how it started. And that's how I ended up joining the bride's message or joining the church. And I guess with it being so small in the organization, it was very incestual. So you didn't date people outside the church. It was just like frowned upon. So you got to think, out of the 50 people that were in the organization or in this church, you know, you dated whoever was there. So there was a lot of age gaps. There was a lot of people who would divorce their partners and remarry someone else in the church. And it was just like a lot of drama. But it was, like I said, it was very, very in-house. So when I walked in as fresh meat, I was basically instantly paired up with the, you know, relatively similar in age single guy. Who happened to be the drummer of the church, and he was the pastor's right-hand guy. He was an exhorter, prayer guy. He was kind of in the role of a youth leader, but he wasn't married. So, I mean, I think I went to church like maybe 2 or 3 times, went to services, and they were already pairing me up with this guy. They're like, you were made for him. You were called to this message. And that's kind of how it was with everyone. Like I had friends that I invited and they would come in and be like, oh, you know, this person would be great for that guy. And it's like, you instantly just got paired off. So so that's kind of how I really started getting involved in the leadership side. So, 18, I started dating the drummer, and everyone told me, they said, he's got a calling on his life. He's meant to be a preacher. You better be ready. You better be prepared. You have to be evenly yoked. So people in the church would pray over me and say that they had visions about me and say, like, literally my life's purpose was to be this man's wife, that God literally created me for this man. You know, and again, I felt special. I felt like this was what I was meant to be. And in the church, you don't really get to know each other too much. I mean, I'm speeding up the story. We did date. We had a 3-month engagement, and then we got married. Mm-hmm. And then I was kind of thrown into that leadership position. We come back from our honeymoon, and I'm a youth pastor.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's intense.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
Were your grandparents, because that's who you were living with at the time, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. As you started getting more involved in the church, were they like, whoa, what are you doing? What is all this?
Yes, absolutely. One of the big parts, because I was in that leadership position, you had to look the part, basically. And part of looking the part in this organization was something we called separation. It was, we didn't cut our hair. We didn't wear makeup. We didn't wear jewelry. Wow. I mean, you were allowed to wear a watch and a wedding band. We dressed modestly, so you had to wear skirts, preferably past your knees, no shaving. It was, your body is a temple and you need to be as natural as possible. So I remember, like, getting ready for church service, I'd raise my hands to make sure that my shirt didn't come up and show my belly. We would practice bending over in front of the mirror, because when we went to our service, you know, we'd shake your bodies and you'd throw your hair around. And I talk about this like this is normal. I don't know if this is weird.
But, wait, you know, you said you don't shave, meaning like you don't shave your armpits or your legs?
No, there was like unibrows all over the place. Like it was like no plucking wow. any hairs.
Wow.
It was, but it was a small sacrifice to make to be a part of this incredible, exclusive bride's message.
Yeah.
So I remember I was rebellious. That grossed me out to not shave. So I did shave. I could admit that now. Yes. But what we would do, the rebellious people, we would double up on our stockings. So that way people couldn't tell that there wasn't any hair on our legs. And that's if you wore a knee-length skirt. So we would go to, I mean, you would go bowling. If you wanted to go sledding, because it was up in Ohio, so it was cold. During the winter, we'd go sledding. If you wanted to do that, you would put on your snow pants and you'd put a skirt on over top of it.
Wow. No.
Everything was in our skirts. I would go out four-wheeling, sweatpants with a skirt over top of it.
Wow.
Was your husband okay with you shaving your legs?
There was some different growths. What can I say? At times, it was when we first got together, I was still basically considered a new Christian, because, I mean, joined when I was 18, got married when I was 19. So I'd say there was some grace when I was younger. But then once we started growing in leadership, and once I became a pastor's wife, I struggled with the separation things, so much so I tried really hard to make it like cool to be separated. So I started a YouTube channel, and I had a lot of like UPC and Apostolic Girls, and of course people that were in this organization. I had a lot of people that followed me, and I would just do like fashion tips, because I wanted it to be like, okay, modesty can be cool. You don't have to mm-hmm. look frumpy, and right. you don't have to be ugly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Question for you. Well, actually, uh-huh. thought too, is one of the things that's interesting is in cults, like I call it like the Insta friend. Like as soon as you step in, that's one of the things that helps like you assimilating into new doctrine and a new environment, is all of a sudden there's these people who are out of nowhere extremely interested in all that is you. Mm. And most of us would characterize that when we have developed really good friendships with people over it happens over time. It's not an instant, like the first I meet you, hey, we're best friends. I love you. You are amazing. You are so special. So part of the tactics of some of these cults is like, as soon as you walk in, having that connection with somebody who appears to be extremely interested in you, it eases the pressure and it helps you kind of step into this like a lot easier. And then the second thing is a question for you, Destiny, is what would you say is the thing or the moment that turned you into a true believer in this cult? Or maybe it was a progression of things that happened.
I will tell you, and it's probably going to freak you out. In this organization, there was something called the Witness Room. Okay. And
Say that again, the Witness World?
Room.
The Witness Room.
Oh, the Witness Room.
Yes, the Witness Room.
Sounds juicy.
And going to the Witness, which meant at the headquarters church, there literally was a room with like a long table, and the elders of the church, those who had special gifts, would get together and you'd fill out a piece of paper asking, like, basically just asking for a spiritual temperature of how you are with the Lord. And the people in the witness room would read over that paper and they would pray, and they would each have different visions or prophecies over you. And you could either choose to do a mail-in witness form and just they would make comments on a piece of paper and send it back to you, or you could go in person. So for me, as soon as I joined the church and as soon as I got kind of paired up with this drummer, and we had a calling on our life to do really great things and be in the ministry, that was one of the things everyone told me, you got to get to the witness room. We got to get you over there. So I believe that happened before I got married. Because that's what really solidified for the pastors who kind of took me in. And like you said, they befriended me. And I was like, I became like a daughter to the preacher's wife. And it hurt really bad later when I left. And it was just like, bam, communication 100% done over. And that was 8 years of my life with this woman who was like a mother to me, just gone. And so they said, you got to go in person. So I filled out my form and they went with me, my boyfriend, who was the drummer. We all went to the witness room together, and the pastors came in with me and I sat down, and then there was probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There was probably 6 people, elders, in the room. And I told them, you know, that I was brand new. My first time getting saved was at 18 years old. It was through this church here. And they prayed over me, and they had these incredible visions. And I can still remember some of them to this day. And it was just this, there is no doubt. Like, I remember one, they told me there's a reason your name was Destiny. And it's because you were destined to be in this bride's message. You were called to be here. And that's when I was like, man, this is what I'm meant to do. This is why I exist, to be the wife for this preacher and to be a preacher's wife. That was my entire destiny. And that's what solidified it for me, was I'm gung-ho. I'm 100%. And we went back once a year to the witness room just to like get a temperature of how you are spiritually.
So that was this one of their main tactics? Because like, I feel like cults in general, one of the things that they prey on and using their tactics are like guilt, fear, and shame, right? They put you in these kind of extreme situations where you're sitting in the seat and they're saying, you are deeply flawed and faulty, but I can help you with that. The world is going to hell in a handbasket. The world is in danger, but we have the recipe to help save that. So it's like these extreme situations that prey on that. What do you say, or what would you say was the tactics that this cult used to like get new believers in?
New believers were few and far between.
Okay, gotcha.
It was like invitation only. Very rarely did people just come in because they saw a sign. We did, which I'm involved in a new church now. And that was one of the things that always bugged me, was it was not an outreach thing. You didn't see us. You didn't see that church going out and actually helping communities. And it wasn't your standard Baptist message to where, oh, you know, Jesus and love and overflowing. And it wasn't until I was married and I was working at a mental health facility. I did a note checking and I did some admin stuff there. The doctor and the people who ran that place was a preacher in the community. And I remember the women got to dress however they wanted to. They were beautiful and they were always so happy and they were so bubbly and they were so nice. And that for me was like this, I was probably like 22 years old. That was like a moment for me. And I was like, wait a second, they don't have to look like I do. And they seem to have more joy than I have. And it was, it was hard for me. And I used to always wonder, like, they're out there doing the community and they're reaching out in all these different areas. And I'm like, I can't, you know, I'm not involved in that. So yeah, it was few and far between. So, but when you did show up, it was like me, it was sad, broken. It was people who literally the night before was in a car crash and drunk in a ditch. They all had this radical story. And like I said, it's getting you at that low spot and just kind of grooming you from there with this silver platter answer.
Gotcha. People who are desperate.
Yeah. So the growth mostly came by babies that were being born into the cult itself. Now,
born and raised.
Yeah. Question for you. What was the moment or what was the truth that pulled you out of that thing?
We had a big church split happen to where some scandals broke out, and my ex and I were pastors at the time. We were down here in Mississippi at that time, and head honchos started leaving the church, like the CEO, the vice president. And that was big. When anyone ever left the church, it was backsliding and it was, Right. So that was a big red flag. And so when I started asking questions, and this was when I was a preacher's wife, so I was in the boardrooms, I was in the secret meetings with headquarters, I was in the loop on all this dirty stuff that happens behind closed doors. And I started asking questions like this, why did this person leave? And my ex, at the time, we had taken over for like a patriarch of the church. So like one of the generations that got past this church, we were fresh, new, young preachers that got handed a very successful church. And he had to keep all these members happy. So I started asking questions like, the word disaffiliate came up. The church was, some people wanted to disaffiliate with the headquarters organization once the scandal broke loose. And what the scandal was is back in the day, I guess the founder of this organization, one of the preachers was molesting and having affairs with boys in the church. And the president took away his license, put him in counseling and rehab. And then he got a clean bill of health after 1 year. And they said he was completely cured and forgiven. They gave him his license back and put him in a new church. All of that was swept under the rug. And so that was kind of that big defining moment for me. Like, okay, it's like you were saying, like, you just keep accepting things. Or I think Joanne was saying, you're so faithful to this organization and you kind of just have to put up with it because where else can you go to get the bride's message? Nowhere.
Yeah.
It's exclusive with this person. You can't just leave that. So that's really what made me start questioning. And once that happened, I told my ex-husband that I needed to take a sabbatical from the organization. And I think I took a sabbatical for a month. And during that time, I really started dissecting everything that I had been taught for these 8 years. And it was so, like you're saying, we'd go to church and preach, and it wasn't like necessarily hellfire and brimstone all the time. It was so dissecting of self to where, like pride, for example, pride is something bad to have. Well, there's seven different levels of pride. You have pride of revelation and pride of satisfaction and like all these different areas. So it was like so, so microscopic into each scripture. And then Hebrew was really big. They talked a lot about Hebrew, and we knew there's so many words and scriptures that I still to this day can trace back to the original Hebrew meaning and what that truly meant. So there was a lot of interpretation of, well, this is what English says, but
yeah,
I know this is what it really means. So that was kind of that big deciding thing. I started looking into that and started questioning it. And of course, when I brought those concerns to my ex at the time, it was like, whoa, this is something he was born and raised in. It was a lifestyle, 100%. This mindset that he was thought to, that he was taught to think in, and trying to get someone who wasn't born and raised in it to open up the eyes of someone who was like generation after generation after generation of his family is still in that church to this day.
Yeah,
and it's sad. It's heartbreaking, and that's you know, why the only reason, like, now I'm like starting to speak out about it more, because it's really sad to think those people are just like I was, 100% believing and putting up with all this really bad, nasty stuff because they think that they can't get this relationship anywhere else.
Damn.
But yeah, I remember like crazy, like, stories of the preacher. She was really old. She's passed away now, but she used to have to preach in a recliner, and she, would auction off her socks to raise money.
No.
Like, auction off her socks?
Her socks. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
This kind of reminds me a little bit. Have you seen the show Perry Mason on HBO?
Huh?
There's a show, I need to start watching it again. I've seen like the first like maybe 5 or 6 episodes. But there's this church, and it's like a takes place, I don't know, like the 1950s or something like that. But there's a church, but it's very much like a cult, and they have like these elders and leaders, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's this one woman preacher, and she's like their god kind of thing.
Yeah.
But wow, that is so interesting. So when you took your sabbatical and you started asking your questions, and your husband was like, whoa, how long was it until you guys actually split up? And what was the moment where you're like, I got to get out?
So it was towards the end. I took the sabbatical and I started experimenting with like fingernail polish and having a glass of wine and like doing this real crazy. I bought my first pair of jeans. Wow. Like super crazy stuff.
Wow.
So I started experimenting with that. And I remember there was little comments. Like I remember one time, now it had been 8 years since I was able to wear makeup, but I remember one time he was gone. I put some makeup on my face and I was like, I'm going to walk around the house with it. And I remember I walked out of the bathroom and he said, what's that crap all over your face? And it was just like, okay. It was constantly just being put down whenever I would try and experience something. And it really, a lot of it had to go back to the separation side, just like outward appearance. But it got to the point where I'm like, I can't do what I need to do to deconstruct this religion that I've been taught with you hovering over my shoulder constantly. So I told him that I was going to go get a hotel for a week. Please do not contact me. I need to think about my future. Because I was like to the point to where I was like questioning if God was even real. It was my spiritual like life was hanging by a thread. And I was like, I know that marriage obviously is super important, but my spiritual life, I think, is going to outweigh making, you know, you happy in this marriage. So I went, and it was still to this day, I remember it so vividly. I went to this hotel and they had a rooftop pool, and I put on my little modest swimsuit. It was like shoulders covered. It was like mid thigh. And that was super scandalous. One piece. And I went up to the pool, and that was something we weren't allowed to do because we didn't believe in mixed swimming, you know, because it's just taboo. You can, men and women couldn't swim together.
Whoa.
So I went up to this rooftop pool, and I sat down and I had a book and I was reading and just thinking. And there was this family next to me. It was a husband and wife and two little boys. And the mom was rubbing sunscreen on the back. The dad was having a beer. Mom had a little fruity drink. And they were just normal family. And I remember sitting there and looking at them. And I just started tearing up because that was that aha moment for me to where I was like, if I go back and try and fight for this marriage, and if I go back and try and, you know, maybe even go to a different church, he's still going to be gung-ho about that church. And it was this moment to where I will never, ever have what this family has. And while I didn't have the strength to just wake up one day and make that decision for myself to where I need to get out of this for myself, it was like the thought of my future children, raising them in something like that, that gave me the strength. It was like right then and there, I knew I would never, ever have what that family had, and I would never have that peace and that enjoyment of life. And I couldn't dare the thought of bringing a little child into that and for having to force them to go to church on Sunday with daddy. And if I had a little girl making sure that she had her little skirts on and her hair pulled back and never cutting her hair, and I couldn't do it. So that that was that deciding time for me. Literally went back and was like, just told him, said, hey, this is what I'm doing. And there wasn't a doubt in my mind. And it, and people think it's crazy because I know divorce and the church and taboo and all that. But when I look back, the strength to do everything that I had to do could have only came from God. Mm-hmm. Like there was something protecting me and guiding me and giving me the strength. Cause when I look back, I had nothing. I had no job, no education. Like it was, like I said, from 18 years old, my entire life's purpose was to be this preacher's wife and to be married to this man. So it's like a whole identity crisis. And I was able to go out and get a job right away and got my own little apartment, started supporting myself. And it happened so quick. And I know that that had to be God. And to this day, he's remarried to a preacher's daughter in the organization. So I know 100% that he's got that life he always wanted. I'm remarried. And it's like, I can say confidently, well, I mean, I don't talk to him anymore, but I can say confidently that where we're both at now in our life is like everything that I think it's exactly the way that it should be. Mm. Wow. So that's kind of how I got out of it. It was that family.
Wow.
How long ago was that you left?
It was only 5 years ago.
5 years.
Okay. So 5 years ago. Thankfully, you didn't have kids in that 8 years of marriage.
Oh, my gosh.
And what's crazy about that is I still to this day struggle in that area, but I can't tell you how many services women would pray over me and anoint me and put oil on my belly because we were struggling and I wanted so bad. I never saw a fertility specialist because that was kind of like frowned upon because it was like, it's going to happen when it's meant to happen. It's all in the Lord's timing. And now I look back, I'm like, all those prayers, all that screaming and crying and oil, like, thank you, God, that I did, that you didn't listen to me.
Sometimes we look back over our lives and we're more grateful for the prayers that God didn't answer.
Yeah.
Amen. Amen.
Man. So now how long have you been remarried?
Rob and I will be married 3 years this August.
Oh, congrats. That's awesome.
Congratulations.
And obviously he is when you met him, was he a believer or?
That was so crazy. Cause when I met him, he knew me, we were friends went back when I was in my Pentecostal phase and so he knew me that way. He's known me through my transition and he knows who I am now. And then he's been able to watch me grow now. Like I run my own real estate broker. So that man has seen me from like
nothing.
Every facet of life. But when I met him, he was far from God, really wasn't feeling it. And when we started dating, I told him, I said, I'm at a place now to where if I don't get involved in a church right away, I possibly will walk away from God. And I really like you, but I don't like you enough to where it's going to jeopardize my spiritual future. So it was awkward. I drug him to church and we tried out different churches and it was super hard to try and overcome this thought process because I've been taught that everything every other preacher teaches is wrong and it's not as deep and not as powerful as what I'm used to in the church services. He came from a Baptist background and I came from the crazy holy roller, so we had to find this happy medium. But with my crazy philosophy that I was taught in my doctrine and the stuff his old school like childhood Baptist beliefs, he started questioning me and I was like, well, no, this, I would teach him things. He's like, Des, that doesn't sound right. That sounds crazy radical. And that actually is what provoked him to get into the Bible. It was more of like to prove me wrong. Mm. Like, no, that's like crazy stuff. You don't need, that's not how it is. And I remember one time, like I was crying because I wanted to wear this little summer dress to church one morning. But it was spaghetti strap. And then it was like 90 degrees because we're in Southern Mississippi. And I put the sweater on over it. He's like, well, why are you wearing a sweater? It's 90 degrees. I was like, well, because we're going to the church and I don't want my shoulders to show. And he's like, Des, do you honestly believe that if you were to die right now in your sundress and go up to heaven, that God's going to look at you and be like, oh, ooh, to hell you go because I can see your shoulders. So it was like stuff like that. So it really provoked him to dive into his Bible. And and now he actually just got baptized. He's baptized when he's younger, but he recommitted his faith. We've been going to our church now for like 2 or 3 years. And then he just took that step to get rebaptized. And it was awesome.
That's awesome.
That's so dope. Yeah. I was talking to somebody that I was coaching one-on-one. And I've heard stories of people you know, both sides, because people always say, you know, you're unequally yoked if you're a believer and you get with somebody that's not, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I've seen it work both ways. Like, as long as the guy's heart or the girl's heart is malleable, is intrigued to learn or whatever. Like, I haven't, there have been times, now granted, it's harder. It could obviously, you know, work against you. But I think hearing stories like that is like, man, it is possible. It is a crazy story. I'm happy that it ended up this way, obviously, because now you're just out here living your life, running your own firm, you know, married again and just kind of thriving. So I'm like super, super grateful that you are sharing your story with us. And for the first time, thank you for like being courageous.
Yeah, I was like, my lip was shaking the whole time. I was super nervous. And crazy stories. And like, we did exorcisms and like, there's so much drama and stuff, but that's like the recap. And I am thankful, yeah, that our paths crossed and that, you know, I was able to speak out. And I don't know if, you know, somebody I think along the way will hear. And if nothing else, my whole goal and hope is that maybe, like I heard from Joanne, listening to her talk about her like cult like experiences, and I'm like, wow, we did that too. We did that too. So maybe someone hearing me talk is in a church right now, and they're like, whoa,
yeah,
that's the same stuff that I'm hearing.
That's exactly what my hope for this thing is that if somehow somebody gets a hold of this, just like the only reason you got a hold of this is because your friend is the one who follows me and sent my invitation over to you, so you weren't even following us. This is like your first time.
I follow you now, though.
Yeah, this is literally her first time anything nights. So I think it's beautiful. It's a blessing. So grateful. Thanks for sharing your story. Incredible. And we're gonna put your link at the bottom so that way people, if they are going through it, if they're in it, they can reach out to you and get some advice.
Yeah, sure.
We appreciate
you. Can't wait to read your book one day.
I know, right?
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Destiny.
You talking about the book I already wrote or my future book?
Oh, you did write a book. I didn't know you wrote a book. Yeah, tell us about that.
No, it was my book is it's called Boys, Boys, Boys. It's a sort of fiction self-help book for teen girls, and it's about dealing with that basically a survival guide for ages 15 to 18. And it's the experiences that you're going to go through in high school coming from that loss, broken damage, because I spent so many years having to, in the church, having to apologize for my brokenness. And so as soon as I got out of church, I published that book that I was secretly, that book was my therapy behind closed doors when I was a preacher's wife. Being able to say, you know what, yeah, I may be broken, but there's no shame in that. And there isn't one big Jesus swallow pill that's going to make that go away, because there's a testimony there. And sometimes in radical religions, we mask that and put on this Jesus facade. And so that's what that book's about. But yeah, thank you guys so much.
That's so rad. Well, we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, girl. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
That's incredible. That is, I like want to watch the movie.
I know. That's the crazy thing about cults is like, oftentimes when we're thinking about them, we always think about them in the most extreme sense. Like Jim Jones was a crazy cult leader back in the 70s. He was a pastor at the time in San Francisco of like a, he was like a faith leader, faith healer type guy. All of a sudden, amongst these revelations of brainwashing and abuse, he moves like all the people in his congregation that at least want to go to Guyana, which he would kind of create his own town called Jonestown.
Wow.
And so anyways, November 18th, 1978, they have cyanide in their cups and sort of this Kool-Aid. So the colloquial phrase, hey, don't drink the Kool-Aid, is literally from this. So over 900 people drink the Kool-Aid and die.
But he thought they were going to be healed, or he was trying to get them all to die.
No, well, there's kind of some different things, and there's probably someone who knows this better than me, but some of these people were kind of, it was like with the intention of like, we're going to reach a higher form of enlightenment. Like for those of you that want to ascend to the next level.
That's mushroom, bro, not cyanide.
Hey, pass that joint real quick. Okay. You know? Some high thoughts. And so anyways, when you think about that picture, like it's so gross and evil and demonic when you think about there were literally mothers who were handing this cyanide Kool-Aid to their baby girl, their baby boy to drink, knowing that they were going to die.
Wow.
Over 900 people died. Wow. And what's crazy thing about this is Jim Jones had had an adopted son. And this adopted son was named after him, his junior. It's a black man. And that weekend where everyone had drank the Kool-Aid, he was off at a basketball tournament in another local village. Wow. Jim Jones would end up, you know, getting married, having a son. His son's name was Rob Jones. Rob Jones was actually one of my high school teammates on my travel team, which is unbelievable. And the crazy thing about that trip was my grandmother had contemplated going because one of her good friends was going, and my grandmother had gotten sick.
No.
And the flu kept her home.
This is unreal.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh my
but like
God.
There's often, and these cults are a little bit more like just crazy because they're just so extreme in nature. Like this isn't like there was a cult in the late 90s called Heaven's Gates. And this was a mass suicide, like 39 people all committed suicide same time or whatever. But the interesting thing about these cults is like cults are kind of like all around us in a way. And I'm not trying to sound like real conspiracy here, but majority of cults are not that extreme in nature. But like there's common threads, and we've talked about them today with our guests who we had. Mm-hmm. And there's so many threads of like, oh, that is so similar.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also look at who are leading these cults, and there are huge similarities as well, to name a few, right? Most of these leaders who lead these type of organizations are extremely charismatic and persuasive.
Mm-hmm.
They are very good with their wording. They feel very personable, even though you don't really know anything about them. They're very black and white in their thinking, right? This is wrong. This is right. You know, these are the lines in the sand. And usually these people are surrounded by people who will do whatever it is that those leaders need.
Right.
They're surrounded by yes people.
Right.
And it's interesting because you think about, even Joanna was saying, like, we spent all this time like pouring ourselves out and serving this vision of this leader. But you think, wow, like you're suffering for all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow these yes people, they find some sort of sense of fulfillment or purpose in following what this leader's saying. The other thing is most times these leaders are unapologetically delusional. They're crazy and they don't care that they're crazy. They're not going to apologize it for any way. The other thing is they're manipulative, which I said. A lot of these will distort the Bible and distort theology. So it's a lot of biblical distortion. And last but not least, these people are usually extremely narcissistic.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So everything that they're doing is unto them.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, you know, like it's the difference between Paul's like, hey, follow me as I follow Christ.
Right.
A lot of these people, it's like, follow me.
That's where it ends.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is where it ends, you know, exactly. And so, yeah, it's so crazy because I had an experience with a cult when I was young. I had a friend who I went to middle school with, and he was a baseball kid, was pretty good. There was nothing on the outside. I wasn't close enough to know, like, what were the things that were, like, making him vulnerable in this season. I didn't know his vulnerabilities in that sense because people who usually sign up for these things are usually, there is some sort of vulnerability that they're easy to target,
mm-hmm.
right? They feel left out. They feel misguided. They feel cheated. They feel like I'm all alone, all these sorts of things. But the name of this cult is the World Mission Society Church of God. This was founded in 1964 in South Korea, where this man named Aung San Hung was essentially took some of the foundation of what we know in Christianity to be true and essentially said, I'm Jesus Christ.
Oh,
reincarnate.
Wow.
And somehow people really started listening to this guy. Like, I mean, today there's over 7,000 churches
of
the WMSCG, World Mission. So anyways, they have, I mean, there's one in Burbank. There's some around here. Like next time you see, this is like a certified cult. Okay. What's crazy is it started in South Korea. I don't know how it got spread here, but it got spread here. But alive right now, they have a person who is God the mother, and then they have a person who is God the father, like in human flesh. And these people are like completely devoted to it.
Whoa.
If you go on their website, it doesn't clearly state those things. It's interesting because you look at their website and you could completely come to the conclusion, oh, this looks like a decent Christian church. This is they got a really good web designer, you know, all sorts of stuff. So anyways, I had a friend and he kind of just disappeared.
No.
Like he just kind of like left in the middle of the night and he went to this church and they were housing other high school boys like him. And like, whoa, who were kind of like post graduation a little bit, but kind of like in these in between stages. And anyways, one of the first things that this cult had him do was completely cut off all communication with his friends and with his family.
Mm. Whoa.
And so he literally had to like, I remember telling his parents, cause I was talking with his dad about it. And his dad says, hey, never try and contact me ever again.
Like, dad said that to you?
No, the son said that to his dad.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so I remember, cause like we did like these like prayer walks in front of the church. Whoa. Like we were like, hey, come on. You know, I'm not going to mention his name, but like, come out, come out, come on, man. Like we're like praying and fasting for this guy.
Damn.
But they were fully convinced that God was a South Korean woman.
Whoa.
And I remember thinking, and this was kind of one of those things that sparked my fascination. I'm like, mm-hmm, how does a normal kid like that get drawn into something like this, where he would completely and utterly change all that he views the world and how he views his family? That he would cut off the most meaningful relationships in right. his life willingly. Like, not just like there's not a gun to his head and right. it's like, yeah, yo, you're not going to talk to pops no more.
Yeah.
Like, but it was like there was something that he was getting out of this mm-hmm. that he thought he was that missing, this maybe. Was a good trade-off.
Yeah.
And so it's so Dude. Crazy because like, and that's one of the big things that even Destiny talked about. Like when you look at cults, one of their big things is their exclusivity.
Yeah. Yeah.
They completely cut you and separate you off from meaningful relationships. And to me, I think one of the beautiful things about healthy spiritual practices is it gives you some guidelines or some principles to integrate into the relationships that are meaningful around you right now. Like it gives you better tools and resources, sure, but yeah. cults just, nope, cut it off.
So yo, wait, did that guy ever come out of it?
Or I never know. I'll never know.
Whoa.
Maybe I'm going to try and reach him. That's a good question. I've been on Facebook in a long time. I'm going to try and find him on Facebook.
Yeah. I'm so crazy. Curious.
I'm reading about Jim Jones in the People's Temple.
Yep.
That's what it was called, the People's yeah. Temple. And it's like, there's some like highlights. While the People's Temple was active in humanitarian causes in its communities, Jones treated his followers often less than humane. He would regularly humiliate them, beat them, blackmail them, and coerce or brainwash them into signing over their possessions, including their homes, to the church. Mm. So in November 78, a congressman, Leo Ryan, traveled to Guyana to inspect the People's Temple's activities at the Jonestown compound. He was investigating rumors that some of the members of the cult were being held against their will, and some were being subjected to physical and psychological abuse. After traveling to Guyana's capital, Georgetown, on November 14th, he arrived at Jonestown on November 17th. Following day when Ryan was set to return home, several temple members who wanted to leave the compound boarded his delegation's truck in order to accompany him back to the United States. So they was trying to bounce.
Wow.
Other members attacked Ryan. Other members attacked Ryan shortly before the vehicle left the compound, but he escaped unhurt, and the truck continued on with Ryan aboard. The temple members that launched an attack at the airstrip from which Ryan and his company were to depart, five people, including Ryan, and three members of the press were shot and killed, and 11 others were wounded. What? In the wake of the shooting, Jones released radio orders from the temple members outside the compound to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. Shortly after, Jones enacted his revolutionary suicide plan on the compound, which members had practiced in the past, in which a fruit drink was laced with cyanide, tranquilizers, and sedatives. It was first squirted into the mouth of babies and children via syringe and then imbibed by adult members. Mm-hmm. Jones himself died of a gunshot wound. Fewer than 100 of the temple members in Guyana survived the massacre. The majority of survivors either had defected that day or were in Georgetown.
Yeah.
Officials later discovered a cache of firearms, hundreds of passports stacked together, and $500,000 in U.S. currency. Millions more had reportedly been deposited in bank accounts overseas. The People's Temple effectively disbanded after the incident and declared bankruptcy in 78. Only one man, Temple member Larry Layton, was tried in the United States for his involvement in the November 18 events. He was found guilty of conspiracy and aiding and abetting in the murder of Ryan and attempted murder of U.S. Embassy official Richard Dreyer and was sentenced to life in prison. Though he was released in 2002, another man, Charles Bakeman, pleaded guilty to the attempted murder of a young girl and served 5-year prison term in Guyana. That's how it ended.
I have so many follow-up questions that we don't have the answers to, but I mean, like, I want to know, like, so he did the cyanide thing because that Congress person was about to go snitch.
Yeah, and tell everybody. No. He after the Congress guy got killed along with 11 other people, that's when he issued the order. The whole reason the congressman was there was to find out, was there abuse happening?
Right. So why did he say, let's all commit suicide? Because he knew he was...
They're going to get in trouble.
We're going to get murder. In trouble because we murdered this congressman.
And 11 people. So ones that did get left ended up in prison for life.
Okay. The and then my other follow-up question that I would love to know, how you were saying his son, his adopted son, the junior, was... away at a camp or something.
Yeah.
Like, was he held responsible for anything or was he...
He's a teenage boy.
Ah, so did he then realize I was in a cult or was he like tried to keep the message going or...
He shared... No, not in any way. He separated himself from that. His story is actually because him and his son, Rob Jones, was a college player. He played in college as well. And now he coaches. Their story is able to look up. Like the ESPN did like a little like feature thing on them, him sharing his background, and him sharing the actual story. And you're just like,
I'm gonna look it up.
Oh my gosh. This is so I'm going to look
that
up.
I want to watch
that. Yeah, it's so fascinating because you think like that is really the thing that, again, like there are so many cults. I mean, Christianity started off as a cult.
Right.
We're just really good.
Right.
We're number one.
Walmarts.
Let's go.
We're just the most accepted.
We're the Costco of the, you know. Yeah.
People are going to be triggered by that. But let me tell you the definition of a cult. A system of religious veneration and devotion directed toward a particular figure or object.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
It is.
So reverence and everything devotion toward a particular figure and object.
Like you could argue that if any group of people shared a common belief, idea, something, and had extreme devotion to that's considered a cult.
Yeah.
Like you could consider people who are like diehard Peloton riders, like Peloton till I die. Look at me on my bike.
Yeah.
Like you could argue that that's like a cult.
Yeah.
And again, it's not to say it's evil. It's just like, you know, all this sorts of stuff. But yeah, it's so crazy because... Like a couple, I wrote down 10 things and I'm gonna go through these really quick of like some of the common threads in what I've seen in cults is one, there's loaded language, right? And my thought is if you could redefine someone's vocabulary, you could change the way that they think about things.
Wow.
Most cults have their, and even in some ways, and maybe in some unhealthy, very toxic church settings, again, maybe it's not a cult, but it's cult-ish, right? You have what we used to call like, it's just like, Christian lingo and
Christianese.
Sorts of stuff like Christianese.
Even Destiny was saying some things and I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, I wonder what that is. But people probably do that about our church all the time. Yeah. Sozo. Manny didn't know what Sozo was. Like, the fire tunnels, the shofar, like, speaking in tongues, like, all kinds of stuff.
The other thing is Insta friends. And I talked about that when you first walk into an environment and everyone is instantly your best friend. So it's like these fake friends and they'll show their true nature later, but it's the social pressure to immerse deeper and then it eases your assimilation into it. Mm-hmm. 8, exclusivity. We talked about it. 7, too many rules, right? Mm-hmm. Too many no's, not enough O's. That's something else, but that has to do with money. But I love that quote. Anyways, it's meant to control one's everything, not to just build structure and organization. The higher up you go, the less rules there are for you. And it's a pyramid type hierarchy. 6 is your mind is suppressed. Mind control starts off very subtle and then it increases once someone is primed for brainwashing. Mm. 5, salvation is redefined. They take existing religious concepts and then they twist and they turn it to make it fresh for these people who are coming in now into the cult. 4, it's goody two shoes. Cults are fertile ground for hypocrisy. You got to give up your personal identity in order to conform to the greater good, right? So you drop all it is that you know. 3, usually most cults are money crazy. They need financing and they are not afraid to bully their followers into providing for them. You look at Scientology, right? Scientology, I tell people, I'm not rich enough to be a Scientologist. I don't have enough money. Two is there's a progression system, right? You reach the top by proving your loyalty to the cult's tenets and your performance. So a lot of these cults are very performance-based, right? And we know that in the heart of Christianity, this isn't about performance, right? This is built off relationship and love. And then one thing is cults abuse physically, sexually, spiritually, emotionally, and mentally. Those are 10 things that I think are like good little...
That's really close to this. Wow. So the Atlantic.com says, several years ago, the founder of IHOP, Mike Bickle, created a list of 7 ways to recognize the difference between religious community and a cult. Written down, the sign seems clear. 1, opposing critical thinking. 2, isolating members and penalizing them for leaving. 3, emphasizing special doctrines outside of scripture. 4, seeking inappropriate loyalty to their leaders. 5, dishonoring the family unit. 6, crossing biblical boundaries of behavior versus sexual purity and personal ownership. 7, separation from the church. Like, those are good ways to see if you are a part of a cult, which... I'd be real interested to see if we get any messages from anyone that's like, oh my God,
I think I'm in a cult.
I think I'm in a cult. If you are, we're not going to put you on blast. We're not going to say anything negative. We're not going to whatever. Like, we're here for you. If you want to reach out, like I said, I'm going to put the links from Joanna and Destiny, who have a lot more experience with it. But obviously, you'll see our links there. So if you want to reach out. Yeah. And man, I'm kind of wanting to do this again. Hopefully somebody will hear this and reach out and be like, I was in a cult too. I'd love to tell my story, because I kind of feel like people are really, I had like 4 or 5 different people shoot me different cult names and was like, oh my God, talk about this one. Talk about stuff I never heard about.
Wow. Yeah.
I was like, ooh.
There's a lot of crazy ones out there. Like, I mean, HBO has some incredible, Netflix has some incredible documentaries on some of these, like, you know, The Vow, which was talked about the NXIVM sex cult, essentially. That's crazy. Wild Wild Country was arguably one of the best like docuseries I've seen on cults. Netflix did it.
Wild Wild Country?
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to save that.
Dude, it is so, it's 6 episodes. I've rewatched that thing 3 times because I was just like, whoa, this is like, and this is the one of the things that's interesting in seeing this is like, I've been a part of, you know, like the Christian church space. I was born into it my entire life, and Jesus is really at the center of everything that I do. But I can honestly say, just being just like, yeah, there's some church spaces that I've been in that are eerily similar to cults. And there's always been that question of like, am I a part of a cult? Like, this is weird. Like, I thought this was right. And, you know, all those sorts of things. And so when I watch these things, I'm always trying to dissect what is it that looks toxic from the outside looking in, because I'm on the inside of the bubble,
right?
In so many ways. So sometimes it's hard for you to identify what it is actually. Like, you don't actually realize you're in a cult for the most part. It has to take someone outside of that bubble looking in to start to address and look at things. And then you look at it and you're like, oh yeah, that's very toxic and that's very unhealthy. So the thing for me is always like, man, I want to have, My intention, everything is like, man, I want to have the truest reflection of what it is that was Jesus's intention in walking this thing out before us.
Yeah.
Like, what is God's intention in the values of the kingdom? And what does that look like in a healthy space? Because I realize we are prone to fail oftentimes. We are prone to be manipulated. We are prone to like fall prey to like some silly, silly shit.
And I really think it's just because you don't know. Like, you don't want to educate yourself. I was dealing with this girl named Michelle on Facebook, and she's an old woman, right? I posted a freaking...
I hope she's old and she's not, like, in her 40s and you just, like, called her out. Like,
yeah, she's older. She seems older.
You don't even know.
Well, because she only has her picture up, and she looks like an older person. Like, she's wearing a dad hat as a mom. So she's like on that, like just old. She looks older, maybe in her 50s, 60s.
Okay.
I think. And so I posted this little excerpt out of Peter J. Gomes' book, The Good Book. Mm-hmm. And he was the head of divinity at Harvard.
Yeah.
Super smart guy. I love his books. Good reads. And so I posted this thing where he just literally just said, the irony of the church today is that at one point in history, the Jewish people kept the Gentiles out of the church because of them wanting Gentiles to become Jew. Like the disciples had this argument that the Jewish wanted them to be circumcised. They wanted them to believe what they believe, and there was a big fight about that. It's like, no, they can come as they are. They're not Jewish. You're mm-hmm. Jewish. Mm-hmm. So he stated that, and he's like, the irony is that at one point the Gentiles were being kept out, and now it's the Gentiles that tend to keep people out of the church based on church history, from the Crusades, from the Catholicism keeping certain things, like if you don't believe this way, you can't come in this way. Mm-hmm. And it's a thing that we do, where he was like, it's the exclusivity of this religion when it was intended to be something that everyone was welcomed in. Mm-hmm. But if you don't think or believe like we do, it's not a welcoming place. So it was like more like a thought on church history than theology. The amount of theological stuff that came at me, people mentioned, like, just, I've never seen so much random projection. Like, even certain people commenting, like, where are all these comments coming from? Like, they're from homosexuality to witnessing to kids to, like, all these random theological things. And I'm, like, literally thinking I'm going crazy, because I'm, like, wait, are we reading the same thing? Or are people coming onto this page commenting on this post, but they saw other posts and now they're like, that's how random it was. So this lady, Michelle, comes on and she goes in on me. She's like, if you're just accepting how people live, then that's not really God, and da 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 da. And I'm like, who said anything about accepting? Like, I'm just like, where are you getting this from? And I'm like, did you read this book? She goes, no, but I went to Amazon and read the comment section, and there was a lot of 1- and 2-star reviews, and they said that this book accepts a lot of people, and that's not what the Bible says. You can't just accept sin. And I was like, wait. So you're not even judging the book by its cover. You're judging the book by other people who judge the book by its cover. You don't even know if these people have read the book. Funny. You don't know. And she goes in. She keeps digging in. And then out of nowhere, you see 3 or 4 people agreeing with her. And I'm responding to them. I'm like, wait. So now you're agreeing with someone who openly has not read the book based on the people that she thinks read the book off of Amazon. And it's not even like, it's people who just left like comments or reviews. And she has like 4 people like, amen, sister. This is what, like, yeah, you're speaking truth. And I'm like, oh my God, how is this happening? And it makes me think of this. There are actually people out there that when it comes to religion will do and accept things that they wouldn't accept anywhere else. I try to get her to come on the podcast. I try to get her, like, let's do it one-on-one. And she's like, no, you're just going to bully me. And I was like, oh my God. I wanted to tell her, you would not accept this anywhere in your life. If you went to the doctor and asked for his diagnosis and he says, I think you're kind of sick. And you're like, well, what do I have? And he's like, I don't really know the term. I just see this fuzzy thing on your x-ray and it looks like it's not normal. And you're going to be like, doctor, do you have your degree? I mean, kind of. I just looked at the Cliff Notes and I passed my exams.
I went on WebMD.
Are you going to actually take him serious? Would you entrust your life to him because he looked at the Cliff Notes, someone else's ideas of what he was supposed to be studying? There's no way she would. But she is the type of person that I feel she would figure out a way to say, sure, I would trust him. Because that's how she literally, when I kept asking, but you didn't read the book. And she would just browse over that. She wouldn't even pay attention to it. She wouldn't acknowledge it. I think she mentioned, why would I need to read the book if I saw the reviews? I was baffled. And the fact that she got cosigns and likes, It literally made me scared. I was like, oh my God, you don't even have to read Like, you don't even have to read the book. Imagine if it was a church and the pastor was preaching and you went up to him and you were like, that didn't really sound kind of biblical. He's like, I just read some commentaries.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't read the Bible. I just read other people's thoughts on the Bible.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, that's our human nature. Like, we want to believe what we want to believe at the end of the day. And we will find whatever it is that confirms what we believe. And that goes both ways. That goes for myself and what I believe. Like, the lens through which I see the world is going to ultimately siphon off into very like, oh, I believe that Jesus is Lord. I believe that he died on the cross and went to the grave and raised up 3 days later, you know? So, oh man.
I think the scary thing about it is maybe, I think that's why I'm not afraid of the other side and what they think. And I'm not afraid of watching the other side's thoughts. Like, somebody hit me up again about trying to cancel somebody else and because they believe this and this. And I'm like, nah, I'm not. I'm not going to cancel them. I want to see what people are saying. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to speak to people that think differently, not because I'm like, you have to be really afraid of your own security and what you believe to think, oh, I'm just going to get swayed. You should just shut out every other voice that's not this one voice that I really want to hear. And for me, I'm like, no, I need to hear all the voices. Because I think a lot of voices make sense. So like, you know, like in a political climate or even in a religious climate, when you get into your echo, it's easy to like what you said, like you end up believing, thinking all these things because your close circle is like, this is all normal. And then you step out of that echo and you're like, oh my God, we are some crazy people. Mm-hmm. To me, the way I prevent that is listening to both and all sides. Even if I know I'm like, I may not disagree with this person because... And call me crazy, but I just think I can learn something from everyone. So when it was political season, I was listening to everybody. I was listening to Candace. I was listening to Ben. And then I was listening to the far left. I was listening everywhere. Because I'm like, you know what? That makes sense. On all sides. Like, I was like, there's things that these people aren't stupid. And I'm learning from all different degrees. Even in as far as religious context goes, it's like I don't ever want to close myself off and even just think, oh, I'm just going to read this person or read this person. So I will read Peter J. Gomes, who's more of a scholastic teacher, preacher. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go to Richard Rohr. But then I'll go down the middle with T.D. Jakes. And even though some people think T.D. Jakes is crazy, like I'm, you know, whatever yeah. they think, which is weird to me. But I love them, and I love listening to all different perspectives on all different sides of quote unquote, you know, whatever, the far left in church or the far right in church. It's the only way I can find myself to be objectively balanced and not demonize a certain side and not get too swayed yeah. by a particular teaching, you know? Hmm. I don't know. I'm not saying, I mean, that's just what I do.
Good job, Lever.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been talking for an hour and 41 minutes.
I know.
This is our longest one.
I'm getting warm in here.
Man. Yeah.
We're going to go watch a movie, y'all. So we're going to cut this out. Hey, tell us if you like this, and we'll start inviting more people that have dealt with cults or been in cults or just cult-like things. Like, we're just expanding. I'm sure at some point somebody's going to listen to share this, or some hater will probably think that we are a cult ourselves. So welcome to the cult of Nart.
At least it's a good one.
At least it's a good one. Oh, man. Shout out to you Patreon people. We love you so much. Thank you, Joanna, for getting on, for Destiny, for getting on. Anyone else who's interested in to continue to these conversations, look, we always say our heart is not that we want to be right. We'll never claim that we are right. We only want to start the conversation. Hopefully, you guys will finish it in your homes, in your communities, with your kids. It's one of the biggest inspirations that we get is when moms are like, hey, I'm talking to my kid about sex now because of your podcast. Or me and my girlfriend are driving to our next city and we were talking about God because of this podcast. And it's bringing up so many controversial and so many things that it's like very taboo to talk about. But now we're actually speaking about these things. So if you've listened this long, we are not here to say that we're right. We're only here to address issues, talk about them, and let y'all finish. You guys decide what's right in your life as we continue to figure out what the hell we think. But if you want to be a part of it deeper, if you want to be a part of our community, have a say in what we do, check out our Patreon. It's the link is below in the description, and you'll instantly become a part of our community even more so, get extra content, and I think it'll be amazing.
Yeah.
But we're going to go watch this movie, y'all, so we love you, and we pray that you find a seat at the table. But if you do not, you are always welcome at ours.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.